Welcome back to Lockdown Indie, home of the bizarre, peculiar, and unheard of stories of UFO legend and lore. Happy to have you guys back. You never know how much time we have left on this earth, and what the point is. So, you might as well do what you enjoy. What I enjoy doing this podcast. I saw today that one of the actresses that I enjoyed from Buffy the Vampire Slayer passed away, Michelle Trachtenberg. She's younger than I am. She's 39. She had a liver transplant. It didn't work out so well for her. I guess she passed away from that. But it made me think of a lot of things, and not everything in this podcast is going to be about that, but I did, it was one of those kind of like gut punch moments where you're like, wow, I've outlived a few people, more than a few people, and you got to do the things that you enjoy to do, so that's why I'm here, and this podcast is going to be a little bit about that. So, today we're going to talk about a few topics that are all interwoven together. We're going to start with Jim Channon, who was part of the Men Who Stare at Goats. The movie was about him. And then we're going to move into the Jake Barber, the new whistleblower, who talks about a lot of these psionic assets that the government has, and how the Western culture has not embraced the psychic phenomena. Even last night, I was watching Seatbelt Psychic. If you've ever heard of that show, you probably haven't. It's okay. It's on Amazon Prime. Seatbelt Psychic. If you watch that show, that guy, he's a psychic, and he does rideshare, and he drives people around, and when they get in his car, he does a reading if they allow it. And this guy is amazing. He's calling out people's parents who passed away's first name. He's calling out their last name. He's calling out what they did for a job, how they died, what special moments they had together. And like, this is stuff he could not have pulled out of thin air or done research on or whatever. Even at the beginning of the show, they have a disclaimer that says he's never met any of these people. And I really believe him. It's kind of funny. He got a girl in his car, and he's clutching his face, and he's clutching his head, and he's like, I'm sorry, honey, I gotta pull around and bring you back. He's like, you have dead people all around you. He's like, I talk to dead people all the time, but he's like, you have like 200 of them. She's like, oh, well, I wonder if that's because I'm a mortician. You think? All she does is work with dead people, and all he does is see dead people. So, gee, I wonder. Yeah, so I thought that was pretty fascinating. Anyway, so let's talk. Let's get into this. So, as we know, Jake Barber came out, a whistleblower, who his primary duties in, you know, the CIA and other aspects of the dark government were to basically do crash retrieval, security, securing the perimeter, and so on. And he did work with psionic assets. Some of these whistleblowers that have come out stating that they were psionic assets. And guys like Michael Jaco, who was a psionic asset as well. He was an intuitive empath that worked in the 20 and back program. And he talked about how you had to go in with a loving mentality. And, you know, he just came out now, you know, in like the after 2010. So his battles must have been, you know, 20 years ago, because he looked like he was about 55. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, well, okay, he's battling 20 years ago. So he could have been battling in, you know, the 2000s, or he could have been battling in the 1990s. And it made me go back even further in time, because if these guys knew that they had to go onto the battlefield with reptilians, with massive building-sized spiders, with huge rock monsters, you know, regular alien grays and whites and so on and so forth, that they have to go in with a loving mentality. Well, they had to know that ahead of time. Why would they? They wouldn't just do that. So they had to have the investigative research to do that. So it made me look back even further into what the government has funded and researched in engaging with alien phenomenon. Now, we already knew through remote viewing that we could see their ships, that we could see these aliens, which aliens were flying the ships, which aliens were allowed to come into our airspace. And we learned that we were powerful enough to take down these ships with psionic assets, that they could communicate through the aliens into the ship and then crash the ship, and therefore regain some of these crashed ship components and do their reverse engineering. But so we already knew this, right? But we didn't know. That's what we're doing now, right? We're in the psionic asset retrieval. We're in the alien retrieval business now, right? We're using these psionic assets. Well, who are these psionic assets? These assets are individuals that they've taken from third world countries or Native Americans and bred them, you know, into these programs, you know, bred them into these psionic assets, these P3 assets. And you have to wonder, right? It's because this Western culture that we're in, this work your ass off, work 80 hours a week until you're dead mentality, is blocking our capability of our psychic abilities, right? The Native Americans, Aboriginal individuals from the Philippines are a lot of the folks that they take into these programs. And what they do is they're more in touch with their spiritual side. We've seen this throughout the history of time. And, you know, when America was colonized and some of these other areas were colonized, they brought, you know, the Christianity, they brought, you know, a way of living that was, you know, work your ass off and make money and build houses and da-da-da-da-da. But they got away from just being happy. Just being happy with what they had. Just being happy with community. And what has Western society done? We went from what so many other countries do. We went away from having third generation families underneath, three generations of families underneath the same household. We went into these households by ourselves, eliminating the possibility of further engagement with our ancestors, and moving away from being in a community where we're always talking to each other, not just within the familial community, but also within the larger community itself. Sure, you can say we go to town hall meetings. Sure, you can say we engage outside of work. But if you go back in time and you think about how the Native Americans engaged, it wasn't over baseball or, you know, and then going to 40 hours of work in a cubicle. No, it was constant engagement, constant energy, communal vibrations through these powwows and these group meditations that are exactly what people who are trying to engage now with these companies that are working on psychic abilities are doing. These CE5 companies that are trying to have a close encounter 5 is basically what a CE5 is. They're having group mentality, group meditations, group energy involvement, and utilizing the earth. These folks are talking about touching the earth with their feet, regaining that connection to Gaia. And so why is this important? Well, because if we go back in time to Jim Chanahan, who developed a lot of these protocols, you can see that these things have been around for forever, but our government started to get really interested in it in the 70s. So the Men Who Stare at Goats movie actually has a gentleman, well, it was created about a gentleman named Jim Chanahan, who created the First Earth Battalion, right? Is that what they call it? First Earth Battalion. So, yeah, First Earth Battalion. Chanahan adopted the term warrior monk, right? A warrior monk for potential members of the First Earth Battalion. It was a concept that was founded by various cultures of a person who combines aspects of being a monk, such as deep religious devotion and an aesthetic lifestyle, with being a warrior trained to engage in a violent conflict. You know, they say it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. So they kind of took a little bit of that, put it in there. Now, what is the First Earth Battalion? What was that all about? Well, the point of Jim Chanahan, basically, he was in the Army, and he requested funds to go on basically a 2 to 3 year hiatus party in the 70s and find out how they could increase human potential. And he found out that there was already a group that had been a counterculture group in the 1960s called the Human Potential Movement. So what was this? This movement took the premise in the belief that the development of their human potential can contribute to a life of increased happiness, creativity, and fulfillment. And as a result, such people were more likely to direct their actions within society towards assisting others to release their potential. See, and that's what we've always heard from all these individuals that have been engaged with aliens, that they state that humanity won't progress until we've reached at least 51% of giving ourselves to a purpose and to community. And we haven't reached that yet, right? Because we're in the Western culture, we're very selfish. We're not focused on giving ourselves to society. We're focused on making enough money to live. And the only way to have enough time to do that is to eliminate the need for having to go to work to survive. We could still work and provide for society, but sitting in a cubicle won't do it. We have to work together as a community and get back to nature, get back to the old ways. We've gone astray. And so they state that with this human potential movement, that adherents to the movement believe that the collective effect of individuals cultivating their own potential will be positive change in society at large. So it has a lot in common with the humanistic psychology that Maslow had postulated. If you follow psychology at all, he said that there was a theory of self-actualization that strongly influenced that development. So the whole goal is really to make people feel that they are using their full human potential to society's benefit. And as we know, so many people feel like their lives are wasted and they hate their jobs. They don't like them at all. But this human potential movement found ways to make that happen. And that's why you had guys like Jim Chanahan, who were working for the United States Army, dressing up like a hippie, getting into these counterculture movements of the 60s that led into the 70s, and tried to utilize some of the psychedelic culture of the hippies and the Summer of Love to understand how human potential could be increased. So this is what Michael Jaco, who was actually a Marine on Mars and Venus and places like this, that you have to go into battle with a loving mentality. He even talked about speaking with the Venusians, people of Venus. Yes, there are people on Venus, according to Michael Jaco. And he states that if we went into battle, we have to go, and whether it's against the building size spider bots or reptilians or any other alien species, we have to go in with a loving mentality. If we go in with an aggressive mentality, we just won't make it. And again, like I said in previous podcasts, you see this all the time in UFC battles. You see guys who are cool, calm, and composed, and those are the guys that, you know, they look across the ring and there's guys jumping around like monkeys and doing push-ups and sit-ups and, you know, flipping around and jumping in the air trying to get their blood flowing. Well, those are the guys that lose, like 99% of the time. If you see a guy out there bouncing around, it's because he's doing it out of fear. He's trying to get his mind psyched up for battle, while you have a guy that's got a clear, composed game plan and ready to battle it out. So, yeah, it's really interesting. So, in this movement, yeah, again, going back to the Human Potential movement, it basically strikes against the Western modern society. It had a set of values that made it, you know, extremely significant for developing the framework for the Men Who Stare at Goats and remote viewing and psychic warriors that they created in the 80s. So when they moved forward into the 80s, they didn't move forward with, like, you know, an angry, aggressive group of psychic warriors, did they? No. They had them in a cool, calm, composed, you know, quiet environment to do their psychic readings or their psychic bilocations or their remote viewings of all of their targets in quiet Gansfield like environments. So basically, like, kind of covering your eyes or closing your eyes, blocking out any other stimulation. They even experimented with those small, like, egg-shaped rooms with water in them. I forget what they're called, like desensitization rooms or something like that, where you float on basically like a floaty with your entire body on top of water so that your entire body doesn't feel any sensation. And now you're kind of like in your head only, and you're able to focus on just your thought processes. Sometimes this happens when people are sick, you know, when you've got kind of fever, or you just, you know, got a really bad head cold and you can't get out of bed, and you're just laying there and your room feels massively spacious all of a sudden, and it feels like you're, like, far away from everything. That's kind of like the same feeling as these desensitization rooms. And they learn this over time. But let's go back into the Human Potential movement and back into the credos of the 1st Earth Battalion. So the 1st Earth Battalion was basically a name proposed by Lieutenant Colonel, which is what he was, Jim Channon. And he had ideas of how to make these new military super soldiers that they needed. And he published a book in 1982. Now, see, the thing was like, you know, the military realized that, you know, they were going into Vietnam and they were dropping all that shit. And they, you know, Agent Orange, and they were fighting with aggression, they were getting killed, and there was just so much death and destruction that there had to be a better way than just physical might. So they started working on psychological, psychic intel prior to going into these battles, maybe even influencing some of their enemies with these psychic powers. So I think that that's something that they were really working on. So that's exactly what he jumped into, that, you know, Jim Channon jumped into, you know, the whole movement in the 70s. He wrote a manual that was 125 pages, which was a mixture of drawings, graphs, maps, essays, point-by-point redesigns of every aspect of military life. He spent the money to create basically a new military, and he did a pretty damn good job of it. I mean, a lot of the drawings are very good, and his concepts of how to utilize the psychic mind really, really spoke volumes early on, prior to anybody writing any documents about remote viewing. Now, see, that's what leads us up to now with Jake Barber, because Jake Barber's talking about the fact that, you know, there's this collective consciousness that his company that he has, that he's been working on, and he has the funding to do it, they're going to start bringing down UFO assets. And the only way to do that is to have this loving mindset, this loving mentality, and to tap into the collective unconscious. The collective unconscious, or the collective consciousness, I should say, is what he calls the World Wide Web of consciousness. So all the knowledge that you could ever want, whether it's winning lottery numbers or finding out where a missing person is, or finding out where your very first car ended up, probably in the junk heap, you could find out, but you'd have to tap, you don't have to tap into the computer, you can tap into the collective consciousness to find out. But in order to do that, you'd have to utilize skills that we haven't harnessed very well as a Western society. Maybe in the Eastern society, they're using it a little bit more. They perform a lot of things together in companies such as meditations on rooftops in China and Japan. They grow a lot of green space even on the tops and sides of their buildings. So they're still staying in touch with nature there. Meanwhile, in America, we're just all concrete. It's funny because, you know, and I'll go off on tangents here a little bit. But I was going out for a walk with my dogs, and we walk in the neighborhood, and we're walking on the sidewalks, and we come up to the, we kind of live in a dead end area, street, and there's like five dead ends in different streets. And every dead end you hit, it says no trespassing after this point. And it's a big open field, and I've seen plenty of people take their dogs out there and run around. Nobody enforced it. Now all of a sudden you got people enforcing it, saying, oh, no, you can't come over, you can't come over here. It's a big empty field. Nobody's getting hurt. Nobody's going to do anything. Yet somebody owns it, and they've asked the local police department to enforce their no trespassing, even though nobody's out there like damaging anything, nobody's out there hurting anything. We're just out there walking our dogs. So I haven't gotten trespassed off of it, but I've heard from other people in the neighborhood that they've gotten trespassed off of it. Fine, whatever. But what made me think that it's very interesting is that I loved walking in that field. I loved feeling the dirt underneath my feet. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily flat all the time. You could crank your ankle if you didn't watch your step, but it was flat enough to where you could be fine, just like hiking. And I felt so much better when I was out there walking in the grass than I did walking on the cement or roads of the neighborhoods or being near houses. I felt more free. I felt more open. I felt more in touch with nature. I felt like I could see the sky more. All of this is true. It's not just a feeling. It's a fact. And then you could walk near some trees and kind of like a little bit of a forested area. And guess what's behind that forested area that they don't want anybody to go next to? A beautiful lake. And it's surrounded by so much brush and trees that you couldn't even see it unless you got really close to the trees and then crawled through the brush. And then all of a sudden you see this beautiful lake that's been untouched. And they don't want anybody to go back there and enjoy it or even see it or know about it. It's really fascinating. I've gone back there, I've checked it out, and it's a beautiful area. And it's a shame that they aren't allowing people, you know, to go check it out. And I understand. If there was buildings back there, I'd understand. If there was a house that was connected to that backyard of that area, I'd understand. But there's not. You know, we stole this land, and now we're blocking off its beauty. It's ridiculous. It's just a ridiculous whole system that needs to just go away. But I'm one man. Hopefully the future will be different. But anyway, why was I talking about that? I was talking about that because we're so out of touch with nature. And I think that's exactly what Jim Chanahan was talking about in his book. Chanahan imagined a new battlefield uniform that would include pouches for ginseng regulators. If you don't know what ginseng is, it's a root of the plant Panax, and it's used in common cuisines and medicines to relax you. He also created ideas for divining tools to allow them to find buried metals, oil, radiation, and other earth vibrations. He created the uniform also included foodstuffs to enhance night vision, and a loudspeaker that would automatically emit indigenous music and words of peace for wherever they were. And it's interesting because that's kind of like, you know, what a lot of psyops use is they use local language. They'll drop, they used to drop pamphlets and pieces of paper with like Uncle Sam on it saying, hey, we're going to help you. We're here to save you to get the locals on our side. And it's kind of funny because could you imagine like China dropping, you know, hey, Kim Jong-un's going to help you. Go just, you know, we're here to help and give you food and da-da-da. I'm sorry, that's not China, that's North Korea. But it'd be North Korea dropping those. I could see North Korea doing that, not necessarily China. But anyway, you know, it's interesting. And Chang'an believed that the army could be, you know, basically a totally different moral and ethical military where the politics could harmonize all the countries on the earth. And he declared the 1st Earth Battalion's primary allegiance to the planet Earth, not to any one country, but to the planet Earth. He said the uniforms would be without uniformity. He said the structure would be without status. Unity would be powered by diversity. And the members would be multicultural, with each race contributing to rainbow power. And he proposed as a guiding principle that members of the 1st Earth Battalion seek non-destructive methods of conflict resolution because their first loyalty is to the planet. If you saw that movie, you would have seen Jeff Bridges, Jim Chanahan, putting flowers into a gun of one of the military members. And you had guys, oh gosh, I can't remember what that general was. He had a general that was totally had his back. He was totally on board with him and was part of the whole group. He's in the movie, and he's played by the older guy that is the, I don't know, colonel or whatever in Avatar, that ends up being like the ultimate bad guy in the end with his own like robot exoskeleton. But anyway, really fascinating stuff. I think that, you know, this warrior monk mentality carried over into the 80s and 90s, and they taught what they learned to some of these guys that were going to be going to Mars, going to the moon, going to Venus, and having that understanding. Because you got to remember, the government not only was remote viewing, you know, 1 million years ago BC on Mars, they were remote viewing current cultures on other planets and how they work and how things engage. And they're also talking to other aliens who are at bases like S2 and S1 and Area 51 and S4. And they're saying, hey, you know, what's the best way to engage in battle if we need to? And these multiple different alien species will give them their suggestions. So it's not like we're just gathering up our own intel. We're gathering up intel from all kinds of species to be aware of how and why and when to engage in battle. You know, what do they call it? The something of engagement, terms of engagement, right? So, you know, if somebody aggresses towards you, you can aggress towards them type thing. And if you go in with a loving mentality, then that kind of changes things. It changes the whole battlefield, you know, like, if they're trying to read your mind and they see that your mind is a peaceful, calm mentality, they're not going to be like, oh, well, let's go fight them. But if they read your mind from a distance and said, hey, they're remote viewing you and saying, okay, they have aggressive thought processes. They're here to kill us. We can read their minds. Then guess what's going to happen? They're going to take over the battlefield, number one. Number two, they can already take over people's minds as well, or remote influence minds as well. If humans can do it, like we already have in some of our secret projects, they can do it as well. Now, who else has been part of this plan, and what does the credo say in the 1st Earth Battalion? Just to kind of wrap this up, I'll tell you what it says. So the credos are for the high commandos and the guerrilla gurus. There's four of them right here. Number one says, I have the capacity and therefore the duty to contribute to the development of myself, my associates, and our planet simultaneously now! Number two is, I will organize a self-supporting high commando group that will create and perform evolutionary breakthrough actions on behalf of people and planet. One people, one planet. Number three is, I will then pass on this concept to others who are capable of generating further self-organizing commando teams. And number four is, I will await the time when my group can connect naturally with others at higher and higher levels of awareness and performance. The Natural Guard. Ah, see what he did there? Not the National Guard, the Natural Guard. And, you know, they classified this underneath unconventional warfare, psychological warfare, and irregular military. So we have a lot of really interesting aspects of this. You know, they combined a lot of different types of warfare into this, and the warrior monk aspect was probably not something a lot of the generals were ready for, because that's all they've ever been used to is you know, violence of action, speed and aggression, and overall dominance of the war field, the battlefield. Not to change the mentality of what's already worked previously, right? But I think that as we move forward, we're starting to realize that there is an entire collective consciousness. It's like a radio signal that's just being emitted to everyone. If you can think of like a Tesla tower or a Tesla reactor, how it has all those all that electricity shooting out the top, and everybody's connected to that, then you'd have everybody connected to a psychic Wi-Fi, if you will, or a mental Wi-Fi, where we're all connected. So the government can like track down criminals using psychics. Psychics can talk to dead people, as I was talking about earlier with, you know, the seatbelt psychic. You know, so we're all connected in this psychic way. You can tell if somebody's lying. You can tell if somebody's telling the truth. We have this innate sixth sense within us that if we listen to it, if we be in touch with it, if we go back to nature, if we go back to the senses that we have, if we listen to the hair raising up on our bodies, and if we connect with our intuition, then we can make progress. But unfortunately, this Western society has been so dominated by electronic devices, distractions everywhere you go. You don't even want to sit on the toilet without a distraction. Remember back in the 80s, we grab like a shampoo bottle and just read the ingredients of the back of the shampoo bottle, because we didn't have cell phones or anything like that back then. We were so bored. That's what we just wanted to fill our time up. We couldn't possibly meditate while being on the toilet. We couldn't possibly, you know, have 5 minutes of the day to clear our minds and try to be in one with nature and our community. No, we can't have that. They want you to work, and be busy with all this entertainment. We need to get away from that. We need to get back to our soul's purpose. Get back to the ultimate purpose is what the human, we have the Human Potential Movement, HPM, is to look at the highest purpose for human potential and something that can contribute to a life of increased happiness, creativity, and fulfillment. As a result, these people will be more likely to direct their actions within society. So you want to share your fulfillment with society. You want to share your happiness with society. Instead of going to work and just being miserable and drinking our lives away, if we can create, if we can develop, if we can find something that works without having to drain your energy all day long. If you can find something that you can work at for a few hours during the day and then have the rest of the day to either rest or to find a way to connect to community or to spend time with your family and community, then I think that we'd be much better off. Imagine if you could work for a few hours in the morning, and then in the last part of your day, you could go to school with your kids and engage as a society, not only with other parents, but also with your children and seeing how they're reacting and engage with them and bring them up as a community versus one teacher only having, you know, one teacher for 20, 30 kids and not enough engagement with adults. I think there's just so many things that we need to change as a society. And if we do, then we'll be able to communicate with ourselves better, number one. Number two, then we'll be able to communicate with entities that are outside of the realm of our thought process right now, because we're just way too busy trying to make ends meet. So anyway, investigate the Human Potential Movement. Investigate the First Earth Battalion. Investigate Jim Chanahan. I saw him do a TED Talk not too long ago. He's kind of wild, kind of weird, kind of wacky, but he's older now. He's been through a lot. And not only that, he passed away in 2017. That's too bad. But anyway, well, he was born in 1939, so I mean, he lived a long time. But watch Men Who Stare at Goats. If you haven't seen that movie will give you a lot of insight into the whole kind of process of how we went from the Human Potential Movement to the First Earth Battalion to the remote viewing and Jim Chanahan and other characters that were involved in the remote viewing project, and seeing how we might be able to come together instead of being torn apart as a society. It's a limited amount of time that we have to come together and work. There's forces that are at play that are separating us, and there's forces of technology that are working against us. We have so many things going on in the air, so many different radio signals, electronic signals, your cell phone, your computers, Wi-Fi bombarding our bodies, basically getting us, eliminating the potential for us to get in touch with our natural selves. It's bombarding our bodies and our nervous systems with all of this electronic ether that we're bombarded locally, and we're bombarded from the skies with satellites. There's 55 to 7,500 satellites around the Earth. It's like insane the amount of just electronic stuff that's going on around that's bombarding us. So it's no wonder that people are upset. No wonder that people are pissed off a lot of the time. And it's no wonder why we have so many people coming down with weird diseases, you know, stuff after COVID, stuff before COVID, post-COVID stuff, POTS. We have stuff that's just going on that's just getting bombarded and taking us away from our natural selves that could really change this world. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. And it's a lot. It's a lot. This podcast went long, but there's a lot of concepts to fit in together because, like I always say, these things are like puzzles, and you put everything together, it makes sense. And then we could go on and on and on about this. I could have a four-hour-long podcast like Joe Rogan and Sean Ryan and all these guys have. And they have great podcasts. But I don't have somebody to interview. So I'll leave it there. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. I'll bring you another one. Take care of your spiritual health, your physical health, your mental health. And there's lots of ways you can do that. If you feel like you've gotten too far away from your spiritual health, then it's time to reevaluate what you're doing for it. You know, if you're not doing any meditations, you're not engaging in some sort of stress reduction, if you're not doing whatever religious stuff you want to do, you know, whatever that is, reevaluate what you're doing. Maybe it's time to get back into society and engage with folks. If you're not doing your physical work, you know, stretching. Not everybody can work out and do the things that other people can, but you can stretch. You can warm your body up. It'll make you feel better. Go for a walk if you can. If you can't, try to do some exercises in your chair. I used to run programs with geriatric folks all the time, and we could do stuff in the chair, and they could too. And work on your emotional health, you know, bringing down your stress level, figuring out how to emotionally regulate, figuring out how to emotionally engage with people without judgment, without anger, without fear, without feeling self-conscious. And once we work on that and develop that, then we're going to be a lot better off. And as always, continue to question the universe around you. Till next time, guys, take care of yourselves. Please go like, follow, share, subscribe. All right, guys, take care of yourselves. Lockdown universe out. Peace.